Hi everybody, welcome to Beyond the Wand, where we find out more about magicians than just their magic. Of course, these are going to, you know, link to magic and being a magician and creativity and all that kind of stuff. But every time I listen to an interview with a magician, I always feel like I want more. I want to know more about them, about what makes them tick. I love stuff like that. It really, really inspires me. And this has very much. And this conversation with Noel, you know, thank you so much, Noel, for doing this. This is the first one, and I just wanted to know what it felt like, see if there was anything in this. And for me, I've loved listening to this. I've loved listening back to it. Noel is a lot more open than I've ever heard him, and that's kind of the point of these conversations. Now, I know that the sound is a bit all over the place. The editing's a bit all over the place. I've disappeared down the rabbit hole. Do not worry. I am on it. It is something I'm spending a lot of time on and many sleepless hours getting into this. So the more we go on, the better it's going to get. And of course, the equipment's going to get better. And this is all framed around an imaginary meeting. You'll get it when you listen to it. And everyone's going to be like this. And I'm sure certain things will change. But just to say thanks to Noel, do check out Mini Book Pro, the new release. We're not going to dwell on this in these interviews and releases, but I think it's important that this is a bit of a win-win. And do check out Trick Trick Boom. You'll hear more about that. In this conversation, we have a bit of a preamble about, you know, marketing and decks and all the stuff that's going on at the moment. But then we get straight into it, and you'll hear about the movies that Noel's like that he would share with this person he's going to meet, what he would do that isn't magic related. You know, if he wanted to get this person into magic, what would he send them on YouTube? All that kind of stuff. And that's the goal for me. So any feedback would be great. Do check out onlinemagic.co, please. That'll be lovely. That is my membership site. Many of you will already know. 900 plus videos, 150 live sessions, and many, many special guests. Some of the best magicians on the world coming and sharing their ideas and their magic on there. It is ridiculous for $9.99. So instead of having Patreon or anything like that, go to onlinemagic.co. I will also be putting the videos of these conversations on there when I get them. You'll be able to find there all of them on there. And obviously at the moment, there's only one. So thank you for your patience. Let me know what you think. Do email me, steve@onlinemagic.co, or very importantly, put a review on wherever you get your podcast. If you go on Apple Podcasts, please give us a 5-star review and some lovely words. That would be great because it really does help. And of course, check out the channel Real Magic Review and all the Noel stuff. Take care, have a good one, and enjoy. Right, we're going.
Let's do it.
Lovely Noel Quarter. Thanks for doing this, because I know we recorded one a while ago, and I decided not to use it. Not because it was crap, but because every time I said something, it kind of did that weird cutting out thing, and I don't know why it was, but apparently it's sorted now. So thanks for doing it again. And I've got a bit of a format and questions and stuff, and I'm not just waffling as usual.
We'll be the judge of that.
I think people have already been the judge of that, to be honest, with me. You see some of my comments. Somebody said on the last thing I did the video of the Dex debacle, Dexgate. Unbiased Magic Review Gate. And someone just said, can you please condense? It was like a 22-minute video. And it's like, can you please condense this into a 5-minute video? I was like, no. Don't
be silly. You very quickly tell me which one's right. That's yeah.
Yeah. What are you thinking about all that? If people don't know, by the way, watch the video on decks and things. You'll see it on my thing.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that I'm probably siding with Lloyd, really. Yeah. I'll be honest, I can't watch the unbiased guy. I don't know. I mean, I know he's probably going to slaughter Mini Book. I don't care. But there's just something. I get the feeling that he's just went, I'm going to have them. And I can't shift that. That's probably my thoughts on it.
Yeah, it's a difficult. I always try and do that thing that I've banged on about, of looking at actually what's happening rather than. It's somebody said something on my, because I reviewed Dex and I thought gave it a fairly positive review. Actually, I said the things that were wrong with it, which are, you know, out in the open. And someone said, on the comments something like, oh, yeah, you've both said the same thing. And I was like, hang on a minute. No, that haven't, you know, because the whole thing was got a bit silly, didn't it? But I can also see why the temptation to do that, I think I've talked about. You know you're going to get a guaranteed number of drinks. Do you know why I said that?
Because you're an alcoholic. Yeah. All you can think about.
Actually, I'm not drinking at the moment. Because as I was saying that, a metaphor came into my head and I started saying the metaphor, which was, it's like if you go out and you don't want to drink, but you know if you do drink, you're going to have a guaranteed certain level of a good time. Yeah. And you're not if you take a risk and you don't. And you have to rely on other things. And I don't think this metaphor worked, but it's like, you know, if you slag something off or you do something, you know you're going to get a guaranteed number of hits, regardless of the quality of what you say.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that was my silly thing. But yeah, so it's tempting.
Yeah, very much.
Was it tempting to hype up Minibook, like in a kind of really massive hype thing of having clips of you and Roddy watching a little video of you performing it to some people? And comment on how amazing the reactions are.
it's a weird one, like, because originally Murphy's wanted it to be pre-release, like they do for all this stuff, you know. It just alienates people. It narks them. I think you can do it once in a while. Like today, Angelo's trick. Dex is. Oh, Dex was called. come on, you got to help me. What is it?
Dex. Right, I'm going to look now because I'm getting it today, and I might miss it because
Demi Deck.
Yeah,
that sounds a bit like Dex, doesn't it? Demi Deck.
Yeah.
So that's had the super push from Murphy. It's like the push of all. I mean, that said, it's been a busy month because Dex was only a few weeks ago. They've been on Super Hype, but like that is a perfect trick for Super Hype because it is something that is. Just like you, it's a fooler. It's a clever trick. It's a bit of a toy. It all appeals to lots of different people. Whereas Minibook, I don't think if you're 6 months into magic, I think you'd probably know what the method was. And we are appealing to workers, not exclusively, but certainly a large chunk of the people that have bought it get paid to do magic, and I think nothing pisses them off more than being... I think if you are... All of the hype tends to be for... Probably more for amateurs, I think. And if you've been doing magic for a while, you can filter out the noise and just tune it out. I'm not... That said, we can all get pulled into hype. I quite like it, but... I think a lot of the folks... That's the reason we didn't do it. Partly we didn't want to do it, and also Murphy's wanted to go straight into launch.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know, I'd be... If I was bringing a trick out and I thought I need a chunk of money, which is pretty much every morning is the first thing I think about, and someone said, look, we're going to hype it and make it look ridiculous, but you'll make this amount of money, I'd be like, yeah, all right, go.
Exactly, I
had faith in the trick.
I've been part of the hype machine, and you know, that where tricks are mine. And partly you just have to say, I'm in the vehicle. It's destination hype, and I am not driving the car. I'm just a passenger in this thing. Because if you are, magicians get pissed off. They scream and shout about how this is awful. You know what? They're still going to buy it. This hype thing, the reason why it carries on is because it works. Because they are always... Angelo's trick, quite rightly, has sold tons, and it is great. Dex sold tons because each one of those tricks is selling them the dream that magicians want, which is, you know, you want to be famous. There's a trick that's holding you back. This is the one you need. It's silently screaming at the back of the head. You're just one trick away from your family saying, turns out your hobby's okay.
and I don't think that's a kind of...
Vindication. That's what we're looking for.
Yeah, but that, and that, on the face of it, sounds... Like it could be taken as kind of like, oh, all the people buying the tricks are stupid. But it's not. I'm like that. I get so excited, like I talked about, as I repeat myself on the video about films. But I've been almost disappointed when a film hasn't been hyped enough. I've gone, this deserved a bit more, you know. But of course, it goes the other way. But I find it quite funny. But I suppose the difference is you're not spending, you know, you go to cinema and watch a stream or a download. Yeah. It's different, isn't it? And spending £75 on something that promises to do a certain thing, $75 or whatever. Yeah,
It's a weird thing because the nature of it is we're selling dreams to a certain extent, and you know, it's. I suppose it's slightly similar to films. You know, if you watch a film and it says, you know, it's going to be, you're going to be terrified and jumping out of your seat, it's all relative, right? If you've seen a lot of horror films, you're probably not going to be that scared. Same thing with magic. It, you know, tell you this is the most amazing thing you've ever seen. If you've been doing it for a long time, if you've seen a lot of things, you're not going to have that same experience. But hopefully, in advance of it, much like watching a trailer for a film, you can kind of make an educated guess as to whether it's going to be shit or not. Because, you know, the same thing with a magic trailer is anything that they are, if they're hiding it, if there's nothing in the, if there's bits missing from the trailer, if things that would make that trick better, they can't be done. Because you'll always see those moments afterwards where people say, oh, I wonder if you can do this. You know, you can't. If it's not in the trailer, you can't do it. If it would have made it better, it'd be in the trailer. And the same thing with, you know, you watch a trailer for a film, think, oh, I wonder if this happens in the film. I wonder if there's lots of amazing moments. I wonder if there's great stunts that we didn't get to see.
So basically, the format of this is that you are going to create a relationship with someone. Don't get nervous.
Even itself, remarkably exciting. That is, normally surrounds me, but even the mere idea that I'm going to make a new friend.
Well, there is that as well. And for me, that thing is also that a majority of people I don't want to be friends with because I haven't got the time. So the criteria is pretty tight. I don't mean I hate people. I'm not a psychopath, is that, you know, but, or a sociopath. But it's that isn't either of them, isn't it? Well, someone that hates people. Anyway. But anyway, so you answer these questions to completely no rules on this. I'm not going to bang through them, but you're starting a friendship with someone. It can be someone you want to meet. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean after 5 minutes of them, you will want to be still want to become their friend, but someone you'd like to spend time with. And the first question is this. First of all, is it someone specific or is it just, you know, you've got no friends, very few, and you wouldn't mind adding another one into the mix?
I think it's someone specific, yeah.
All right. So do you want to give us that now or at the end?
No, we'll do it now because I worked all this out without realising. So I've worked backwards and picked someone at the end. I'm going to go with Bill Murray.
Oh, very interesting. Bill Murray. I thought you said Bill Malone for a second then. Which would be, you know, not necessarily that big for him, but I thought I would just expect you to say Bill Malone.
Fast Eddie in Chicago. Yeah, no, no, Bill Malone. You got into my head. Bill Murray. Which one do I want again? Yeah, Bill Murray.
Right. So Bill Murray, and give me a very quick reason. What was the first thing? What's a, you know, the thing that springs to mind when you think? Because there's different eras, right? There's Ghostbusters era. There's way before that. Then you've got your kind of Lost in Translation era, and you've got your kind of Wes Anderson type, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I think 80s when he was massive. That's when I. Yeah, that's when I want to be friends with him.
All right.
Because I think it'd be a challenge, and I think he could be a difficult prick like me. So I quite like if I was friends with him a lot, I'd proper put the work in. I'd be delighted.
Yeah, you don't want him to be all over you. You know what I mean? Or desperately excited to meet you and stuff. You want a bit standoffish. You want to be able to work for it.
Yeah.
Right, so the thing is, he doesn't mind magic, but It's a bit weird. Like you've been texting and stuff like that, and you're super excited. It's like, and you go, oh, I can't believe I'm gonna like. And he's like, all right, well, we'll meet up. He's in town, right? He's near where you live, and he's like, I'm in the area. I'm there for one evening, and you know, show me where you live. Show me the joys of. I know where you live, but I'm not saying anything bad about it. But it doesn't have to be where you live. Actually, it can be anywhere at all. But what would you do if so? I don't want to do a magic thing. I'm not into it tonight. So what would you do? What would you suggest if it was not to do with magic or anything like that?
Well, that is a great question. And unfortunately, because I did this in the wrong order, I've got an answer that's got nothing to do with Bill Murray. In fact, it's the opposite of what I would want to do. But my original answer was go to a comedy club and watch stand-up. But I don't want to go there with Bill Murray because...
Why?
Because I know that I've got a condition, which is I don't laugh at things that are funny. I laugh inside, but I'll just go, oh, that's fine. I mean, I do laugh, just not as much as you should do. And I get a feeling he might be the same. And then if we looked at each other, we were trying to forge this wonderful friendship. We both look going, he's hating this, even though no one knows whether we were or not. But like, I can go and see things that are, you know, pretty good, and very little comes out of me, which is an unfortunate condition, as it does look like I've got a bit of a sour face.
It's are you one of those people that if you suggest, like, this completely rules my life sometimes. If you suggest doing something with someone, I get obsessed with the fact if they're liking it or not. And then, like, if I say, oh, watch a film, it's my favourite film, and then we're sitting watching it, and they're not, like, engaging with it in a physical way, which you don't a lot in films anyway, I'm going, they're hating it, they're bored. And that completely ruins the experience for me.
Yeah, a little. I'm probably better than you are, but I'm certainly looking for that little bit of feedback of the nod, the affirmative. Yeah, I'm with you. We're going along for this together.
But that's the thing. I do this with my son all the time. We went to see The Ocean at the End of the Lane, which is a theatre production of the Neil Gaiman thing. Yeah. And we tell it's brilliant, and it's quite pricey, isn't it? Kind of thing. And I'm looking at him. I'm just going, he's so bored. He is so bored. And then when the interval came up, he said. This is just so good. He said, I can't work out whether it's better than Harry Potter or not. You know, the theatre show home.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking, well, of course, I mean, if you're watching a play and it's not a comedy, you know, it's got laughs in it, but it's not, you are, there's no way of kind of, you're just into it. You're not kind of nodding along or anything like that.
Completely.
Yeah. And I think magic's a bit like that. It's like you can see people struggling with... It's a bit of a different thing, but knowing how to respond to magic as well. You can see them kind of...
Well, we've all had those moments at gigs, certainly, where someone has got a right face on. They're not actively saying they hate it, but neutral, looking grumpy. And then when you leave the table, they come and find you and say, mate, I just want to say that's the greatest thing I've ever seen. That was brilliant. I loved it. It was amazing. You could let your face know. I thought you hated me. Yeah. I mean, don't say it to their face, but yeah, that's something along those lines. And it's you can't be absolutely certain of how someone is perceiving something just based on how their face looks during the show.
No, Bill Murray would have that face all the time. I can't imagine him being in a comedy club pissing himself laughing. Or maybe, you know, don't know.
I could. I imagine if something, you know, someone tripped and cracked their nose open or something like that, I can imagine him howling with laughter. On reflection, that doesn't quite tally of what we're going to go and do.
All right, what would you go for then? Putting you on the spot.
Do you know what? That's interesting. It's because I picked him because I think it would be a challenge to be friends with him. But I also think I can't think of anything that I'd like to do that he would also be excited to do.
No. Well, maybe that doesn't matter though. Maybe it's about what. What you want to do, you know, regardless.
Yeah.
So maybe a comedy club's all right. I don't know. Maybe that's what you want to do.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, I think what I really want to do is just hear him speak and just be in there in that environment. So probably, you know, cocktails would probably be just sat there and telling stories would be probably my favourite thing to do. Although it doesn't sound like the most compelling of hot dates, but. Yeah, that's mostly I just want to hear him speak.
I reckon that's the way to go then. I reckon that's the way to go is cocktails, asking him questions, researching what he likes doing, what he likes, and asking questions about it. And if you were going to go to a comedy club out of interest and you thought, right, he's seen on Saturday Night Live, all that kind of stuff, he knows all those people, what comic on the circuit would you like, if you like, oh, there's a comic and he's touring, he's not kind of like, you know, somebody that's on telly all the time, who do you reckon you didn't want to introduce him to?
Ah, That's a good question. And that's why we're here. Hold on, I'm thinking. You have to edit this bit out.
No, I don't. Kitson for me, I reckon.
Yeah, Kitson. You know what? Kitson's such an easy answer. It's just
doesn't matter.
You know what Kitson is? Kitson's the Ace of Spades. It's Shawshank Redemption. It's the top answer from a lot of people. Yeah, Kitson. Let's go, Kitson. Kitson's brilliant.
Yeah, Daniel Kitson, by the way, for people who don't know, is one of those people who he will sell out every venue without having to advertise. A lot of people won't know who he is. He's a stunning comic, but also does like storytelling shows and really unique things. And I would say, actually, you're not always guaranteed, because he's quite experimental, you're not always guaranteed that it will challenge you sometimes. You know what I mean? I've seen Daniel Kitson before. I mean, it was work in progress, but stuff that wasn't that funny, but was just fascinating. And he's a fascinating character. He doesn't give interviews and stuff, does he, really, or anything like that?
No. It's similar. I mean, Stuart Lee's a bigger star than Kitson, but sort of similar in that you could watch an hour and a half of both of them, not laugh that much, and still think it was absolutely brilliant.
And
made you think. I don't know. You know, I do want, I'm a sucker, I do love jokes, I do want to be actually funny. I don't want to go to an Edinburgh show and just, oh, brilliant. It just made me think a lot, because I'm trapped in my mind. I don't need other things to be thinking about that are worrying me. So I want as many jokes as possible. But Kitson, people like Stuart Lee, great comics that aren't always achingly funny, but they are always brilliant.
Yeah, and I think there's something that, and it reminds me of, I went to see, you know, Dave Gorman, way back in the day.
Yeah.
I think it would have been, oh gosh. When he did his first, he was one of the first people to do like a PowerPoint comedy show, wasn't he? So I'm Dave. What was that one where he looked for everybody called Dave Gorman? Other people.
Google.
It was before Google whacked. It was I'm Dave Gorman or something. Yeah. We were talking about this the other day.
Yeah.
But the whole concept was he tried to track down other people that were called Dave Gorman.
Yeah.
And he was one of the first ones to have PowerPoint. I'm sure people did it before, but not many. And he started that whole sort of trend of presentation comedy. And it was, everybody was talking about it in Edinburgh. I mean, it was huge. And it was before I was a kid, so it would have been 2002 or something like that. But, and I went to see, it wasn't that funny, you know, but it was just, it was funny and you felt the funny in it. But it wasn't like laugh out loud. And for me, I don't know. I almost prefer it if there's a few, it's like a horror film. If there's a few and a magic trick, funnily enough, if you hit me too hard with all of it, it's kind of, I don't know what to grab onto. So I quite like.
No, exactly. It's good to have a little bit of a difference. And also, if you watch it, if it's achingly funny, I don't know. That's crazy. You can get tired of laughing too much. It probably knackers you if it's an hour and a half of hysterical. And it's nice to have a little break, just for a minute. I'll change your mind. Turns out I do like thinking a little bit during the show.
Yeah, I think so. And I wonder if that's because I could talk for ages about this, better move on a bit. But I wonder if that's because we've seen sort of behind the curtain a little bit. I think, you know, if you're any kind of, you know, you see the kind of structure and the work. I saw Russell Howard recently. I don't really like Russell Howard very much, but I wanted to see a comedy show that was a big theatre comedy show that was selling out and had a spare ticket. Went, you know, and he did an improvised bit at the beginning, which was great. Not totally improvised, but kind of written that day about Sheffield, clearly. And then he went into his stuff and I could see the working out of it. I could see it wasn't very funny and it was, but everybody's laughing because he had those beats. It was scientific. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But at the end of it, I kind of felt nothing. He did the corpsing thing, you know, they're trying to get the joke out and the corpse can't get it out and they're on the floor, you know, I don't know. But then obviously that's, again, because we've seen a bit.
Yeah, it does. It's certainly, I think for all entertainment things, sometimes if you've seen too much, it can, well, you can also, like, you know, both of us could watch a magic show, for example, and still appreciate lots of things that had merit about it. But the more you've seen, the more you've experienced, the more you know, you have to try and turn your bloody analytical brain off. That's constant processing. Go, interesting use of the principle. Clever that they use that. That's, you know, just constant commentary that's running in my head at all times in every sort of entertainment thing I'm watching.
So you did, right? You went to cocktails. And then you went,
yep.
And Kitson was on, and he did like an hour. So he had time, and then you had some more cocktails. And then he's like, oh, I've got, he's sitting at the bar at his hotel. And you do that thing of, you know, he's talking about music and stuff. And he, I remember he did that karaoke of that Elvis Costello song in Lost in Translation. And you're talking about that. You're saying, did you do it in one take? And he goes, yeah, do you like that song? What sort of, and you think, right, I want to show you this song that I'm into. Now, musically, is music a big part of your thing? Or have you got one, have you got anything that you think is a killer tune that if you had to share it with one person and him?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't normally get embarrassed, but it turns out this is what it feels like. Music and me have a strange relationship. I do like it, clearly. You'd be insane if you didn't. I do listen to music. I just don't listen to a lot of music. And honestly, my answer to this is I would play him the theme tune from The Dukes of Hazzard. That is...
brilliant.
Because, genuinely, if you looked at my playlist, it's entrance musics of wrestlers, entrance music of wrestlers, theme tunes of 80s TV shows, random rock songs that I really like, but I've heard too many times. And I can't take the chance of anyone. People talk about, oh, it's great he has an eclectic taste in music. But sometimes it can be too eclectic, and always, like, first dates or any of those other moments where you have to share this, you think, I can't show you my Spotify. It's just, it's such goofy madness. There's two. Oh, here we are. It's the theme tune to Airwolf. I'm just as likely for that to come out, or the theme tune to Mask. And it's just a lot of 80s cartoons and silly sort of stuff, and nostalgic stuff that I go, oh, blood, it's the Magnum PI theme. And I'm start going crazy to it. So, I've a weird relationship with music. But right. I do like it. But, you know.
Well, I think, to be honest, I think that's a good answer. A couple of reasons. Because theme tunes and those kind of things are great for magic and great for shows and stuff like that, like movie themes and all that. But also, have you Matt Berry released an album of TV themes? Have you seen that?
I haven't, but I know it exists. It's great. I should listen to it.
But it's weird because it's kind of very similar to the originals, but just a bit more kind of funky and obviously re-recorded because they're all quite old. But it's got the Rainbow theme tune. Sorry, classic British TV things. I'm not sure if there's American ones on there. But I think The Dukes of Hazzard is a banger. And loads of people go, well, I was going to say, of course, loads of people are going to know it at a certain age.
Yeah, let me know if anyone ever says that as their answer as well. Obviously, I'll listen to every episode, but I am interested. I'm guessing there'll be no duplication of anyone else saying that.
No, but I'm not just saying this. I think I sing that to myself twice a year. Definitely. I definitely sing that to myself. Yeah. Because it's just there. It was so prevalent in my childhood. I know the words.
It's prevalent in my adulthood because it's on my... When it says, here are the songs you've listened to most in the year, and it'll be one random song from an advert that I'll have heard, and I just went crazy, going repeat, 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 repeat for 1,000 plays. And then it'll say, and number two is the theme tune to The Dukes of Hazzard, or whatever other sort of like crazy thing that... I was obsessing about at that time.
Yeah, I reckon you'll get that off the Matt Berry album a little bit. Just a couple of songs. The Sorry theme tune is a masterpiece. Sorry, with Ronnie Corbett. Yeah. Ronnie Corbett? Really? Yeah, that's got the right one, haven't I?
Yeah,
it's so good and so deep and quite complex and quite technical, a lot of that music.
I'm all over that.
Brilliant. So, same thing. So he's taking The Dukes of Hazzard, which is probably quite nostalgic for Bill Murray as well. Because I keep forgetting it was actually American, wasn't it? Even though we had it in our on our TV. Yeah. It was like that and what was the Cannonball Run? I was going to say Cannonball Run. All that kind of stuff that was around. Yeah, same time.
Yeah, huge.
I love the thought of you going down the street. I'm thinking of the scene like Baby Driver. You know, like in Baby Driver, he's got a theme tune and everything he does is to a theme tune and you're rocking on down the street to the Dukes of Hazzard.
I once had a... I was going to a wedding in Newcastle and the train broke down and at York, and I couldn't get to the wedding. And I texted Tom Crosby, who's a hero, and said, "How would you like a special treat? How would you like to spend the rest of the day with me?" And he drove me like a hero to the wedding in Newcastle. I paid the petrol. And at one point I got fed up of the music he was listening to, which was perfectly fine, and said, "Can I play some songs?" And the look on his face, who is half my age, at the insane things that were coming out of my my phone of 80s theme tunes and a song that was once in an advert on a loop. Another little bit of trivia is when we arrived, the guy at the hotel, Tom, was coming up the stairs behind me, and like a good little little soldier, he had my suitcase with him. And the manager couldn't see this happening. And then the manager said, "Oh, do you want a hand with your badge or anything like that?" And they looked behind me, seen Crosby, and said, "Oh, it's all right, your son's got it." which I don't know who's more scarred. The two of us have had a lot of torment. I've got torment as well from that. So, yeah. My son.
I love the fact that you're train breaks down, and not only is he spending the day taking you to a thing, but he's carrying your bags.
I wrote him into it. Like, at all times, there is moments from a sitcom that's happening in my life. At all times, there is a constant thing. If you could just, yeah, to get CCTV in my eyes, it could be live streamed for the insane scrapes I get myself into.
I know, and I enjoy so much hearing about them. Bit later, you're doing the same with films, right? So obviously you got Bill Murray, right? He knows his stuff, and it can be something. Of course, it's going to be difficult. Actually, would it be difficult to introduce a film to him? Maybe it's something a bit niche.
Yes, everything would be difficult. Yeah. Everything would be difficult. I thought all this before I decided on Bill Murray, so now it seems like an even bigger challenge. There is a film that didn't come out that long ago. With Bob Odenkirk in it, called Nobody, where I bloody love that film, and he's beating the shit out of rat bags, and he's an old fella, and he's retired, was he CIA or something like that?
Yeah, no spoilers.
Anyway, it's a good film. And at the end, they'll play You'll Never Walk Alone, which is the song for Football Club that I love, and that is genuinely, I cried. I had you know, an elbow's worth of Jack Daniels. So I remember sort of crying at the end of that, of an action movie. So
that's such a brilliant film. It's one of those films that somebody was recommending to me before it was on Netflix. It came on Netflix relatively recently, but it was around before that. But it's one of those films that was on kind of like Now TV. And I saw it and I thought, yeah, they're shoehorning it in. He's kind of done some kind of straight to video, or straight to download, of course, Show Me Age thing, just on the strength of, you know, Better Call Saul. And then I thought, you sort of guess what kind of film it is, but it's not. It's so beautifully done, I think.
Well, you think, how can they get to, once you know what the premise of the film is, they think, how can you get to those moments? Because they cannot deliver what is promised in trailers or publicity for it. And they do. They absolutely do. He goes from, you know, nice guy to... Well, he's still a nice guy. He's just a physically active, nice guy.
Yeah, and he's got a face, hasn't he, that you just kind of... I don't know what it is. It's the same with Better Call Saul. I thought Better Call Saul was going to be like him and his wacky stuff, doing lots of wacky things.
No, he's great. It's just,
yeah. He's got one of those faces that you just want to watch him. And I think it's... Of course, he's a very successful actor, but I think he would have been one of those... people, had he been at the right place at the right time before Breaking Bad. I'm not saying he was a nobody, but he could have been one of those actors that, you know, is up there with, you know, kind of De Niro and stuff, for me, you know, in a different way.
He's a brilliant character actor, and just because he's good at comedy, that will weaken how he's perceived by others. Going, oh, yeah, the funny guy. Yeah. Same thing true of Bill Murray, that, you know, just if you're good at comedy, you can't be that good an actor. He's just, he's just a silly clown. You know, yeah, but they're both brilliant, really good actors.
Do you think that's the same with magic as well? I think about this because I've spent 20 odd years doing, I'm loath to say comedy magic, but I like talking on stage, improvising, playing around, trying to find funny in little bits and pieces. And then there's a couple of routines that I want to do that are, you know, to music, and they're supposed to be just aesthetic. They're meant to just look nice, and they're sort of serious. Again, it's not serious, but, you know. Do you think that that's a difficult thing? Like, if Charlie Fry was to kind of walk on stage and do half an hour of contact juggling to Enya, you know, but I'm not saying that nobody wants to see that, but is that something that people go with, do you think, or is it a difficult transition?
I think there's something that's true, probably true of all things in entertainment, certainly true of magic and the world that we know about. People, audiences, and, you know, magician-only audiences, they want you just to be one thing, I think. And so if they see me, I'll be introduced as a magic creator, which indeed I am. But it's not how I'll make no money. I'd be on my arse if I, you know, I'm a gigging magician, and that's, and people, people will readily say, I guess you've completely retired from doing gigs. And, you know, that's just because of the assumptions, and they're kind of confused and possibly slightly annoyed that I'm not just sat there at all times thinking about magic tricks. I think the same thing is true of other magicians who are comedy magicians. As soon as they, if they try to write some essays about theory, they say, what's the funny guy want to be writing about any of the heavy stuff? Or people want to pigeonhole you and say, you're that guy, you're in this world, you can't be going out into different things. I don't trust you, and I don't have interest in those subjects. I don't think you know enough about those things to do other things.
Yeah, and let's but I think about back to the kind of 80s where it, and the last person I think I saw do it, and I think a lot of people have done it in live shows, I just haven't seen him, but I remember Lee Evans when he was massive, it might have been the 80s, early 90s, whenever, did a TV.
Midnight.
Yeah, and he did a song at the end of one of his live shows that was broadcast, I think, and it was quite a moving song about being, you know, Tears of a Clown type thing. But it was really weird. I found it really odd. And I thought, had I been expecting it, and he was someone that did that, and maybe did, but it really jarred with me. I couldn't quite buy into it until 3 minutes in and it was over. So maybe some people are better. John Archer kind of does a bit of that, you know?
Well, Archer does it, ends with a song, and it's lovely. And it's an old showbiz thing, certainly an old comics thing of ending with a song. And because it's also the same reason why magicians, Copperfield ends with snow, and you know, or used to in the show. And the reason that's great, and that's, you know, a beautiful thing, but no one's running screaming thinking, how can this be? It's not the greatest mystery in the world. It's a palate cleansing magic trick. And that's the reason why the song is there at the world. You know, you've laughed. We've had a great time. We bonded. And I still want you to leave with warmth in your heart, but I want it to transition into a different kind of thing. So we're getting ready for leaving. That's why you'll see, you know, Jeffrey Durham thing, start with the best trick, you know, close with the second best trick you've got. And then the last thing is something palate cleansing, whether it be, you know, snowstorm or ending with a song or something that is not the most devastating mystery, because you don't want people leaving, well, I don't, with, oh my God, like so stunned that it's almost knocked them sideways and they're not ready to leave. They're sort of thrown stupid by the magnitude of the magic. And the same thing, that's what other acts are looking for as well, which is, there's just a soft sort of lowering of things. It seems... to magicians, that seems insane, I suppose, but that's what they're doing. Is I just want to, let's bring everything down a little bit. We've had an amazing time, and let's, we're final connection. We're going to transition to you leaving, and with it, just a slight change of tone.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice thing. You know, I remember the Penn and Teller show. I haven't seen Penn and Teller for years, but they finished with it. Penn Jillette holding a fire torch, talking about street performing. You know, it's that moment that's, when it's small.
That's exactly it. If you look out for it, you'll see it all the time. You think, how could they end with that? It's just, you know, but if it was just, let's say it was the Penn and Teller show and the last thing was Bullet Catch, and you're like, oh my God, it's amazing. You sat there, you're almost, like I said, it's almost punch drunk from that magic trick. And you want to just just give them that moment just to collect themselves again before they leave and go, oh, do you know what? I feel nourished by the show. Because that's, a magic is an assault on the mind. That's what we're looking to do, is devastate people with miracles. You just want that moment where you go, you know what? You've watched a show and now I'm gonna bring you back sort of to the real world, but in a softer way while we're working together to get you ready for the real world again after blowing your mind repeatedly.
That's brilliant. I'm going to do it. Next time I do close up on tables, I'm going to do a poem.
The only exception I would say is jobbing close up magician. You start doing a poem or Tears of a Clown. I mean, as it is now, it's 50-50 as to whether it can go well. But if I add that in at the end, start doing If or something like that at the end of the... I do Extreme Burn and then I do 8 minutes of reading out If. That might well be a case of, we've seen enough, mate. It's been great, but rough.
Right now, I don't know if you're much of a reader. You give them a book to go away with.
Yeah, so that's an interesting thing. So I've got the gimmick, I've got the ADHD, and I can't sit down. I mean, I can sit down. I love sitting down. I can't focus my leisure time. I'm at all times drifting between, you know, look at the iPad, doing emails, watching a bit of TV, stopping, playing online snooker. It's just a stream of everything all the time of unfocused chaos. So this is terrible. I haven't read a book in forever because I haven't got the attention span for it. Also, my eyesight is terrible. So reading is a proper, I used to enjoy reading, but you know, terrible now. I'm going to go with an audio book that I listen to, but I bloody love, is Limmy's Daft Wee Stories.
Isn't it great?
And they're stories that even I can focus on because they're a couple of minutes long. And just hearing his voice, it's just brilliant. So funny, so clever, so much imagination. In fact, if anything, at the end of each short story, I remember it ending and I had to stop it because I was a little bit furious that I, as far as I was concerned, didn't find out what happened to the rest of the family in this 3 minute sort of horror story, or, you know, whatever this tiny little drama, this world he's created. And at the end, I'm thinking, I need to know. I'll just have to send him a message and find out what really happened the next year when they went on holiday after that big drama, even though they're just these short stories. I was so captivated, so pulled into it all.
That's a brilliant book. I've got it, and there's a story in it. It's like a page and a half or something in there. It really got me. Someone having some sort of affliction. I can't remember what it was. But that short stories do that with me as well. I love Stephen King, and I remember... I never got into his short story books. No, I think it's Nightmares and Dreamscapes. And his novellas are great, with The Body and Stand By Me and all that, which is the same thing. But The Running Man. But it's not long enough for me to invest. I'm not saying all short stories are terrible, but I like that kind of thing. And but Limmy kind of, it's so funny. And he's someone that his stuff on YouTube, like his clip, there's so many of his sketches on YouTube now. Of the Limmy, what was the show called? Was it just Limmy Show? The
Limmy Show, yeah.
Where he's got bits that are so funny because they're not the obvious gag, and again, they're not laugh out loud, but you can empathise. And there's one where he's going into a shop and he's rehearsing how he's going to ask for the haircut or something, and he's just going, I just want a haircut, you know, whatever it is, and then he goes in and just says a lot of nonsense or whatever it is. I've had that so many times where you overthink a simple interaction.
Oh, massively, massively. Yeah, me too, yeah. Just at all times going, I remember I was having driving lessons a lifetime ago. And in advance, from about 2 days before, I'm going, right, let's practice. He'll say, how you been, what have you been up to this weekend? And I want it to be short and concise, but a little bit funny and kind of interesting, but a bit of mystery. And by the time it arrived, I remember I was so tense, so stressed. I would stand at the window waiting for an hour and a half in advance going, when he rings the doorbell, in fact, I can't let him ring the doorbell. I've got to be on my toes straight away to present as the best possible learner driver and with, you know, a funny, interesting, but concise story. And yeah, absolute nightmare.
Do you know what? It's so, I get that all the time. We all get it with, maybe your first gig that you did, you know, you're used to talking to people, you know how to kind of, and all of a sudden you're thinking about every word, which I think it's a disservice sometimes to people when people are always going on about the importance of scripting every trick you do.
Yeah.
You know, on stage is a bit different and all that, but in close-up, and you just saying, look, talk to me. If someone will show me a trick, say on my course, and they haven't performed and they're nervous about going to show someone, and they'll talk, I'll just start, do that. You know, don't think that every line, you know, you're showing someone something in an informal situation. So just talk to them. But we overthink that thing of, and it's, yeah, it can be, I've had that. It's like a date, isn't it? You know what I mean? If you go on a date or you meet someone, everything you're thinking about, what do you say when you sit down? And of course, if you do that, if you did that in every interaction, like every time you want to see a member of your family, you're there going, oh, what am I going to say when I go in? But you just know it's going to be all right.
Yeah, absolutely. Little side note, when you said dates, and this is slightly sort of interaction themes, I'll tell you a quick story of one of the worst dates I ever had, only because it was to do with questions and clumsy moments. But I met I'll try and keep this short. I met this girl online, and she said, and I said, let's go out for a drink, and it was all good. And then just an hour before, bear in mind, I was on my way to London at this point, she said, just to let you know, those photographs of me on Tinder aren't of me. Anyway, I'll see you shortly. And what? So, like, I didn't even have enough time to process that. So she arrives, and those photographs were of her friend who had an account.
No.
So in itself, you go, this is already insane. So she sits down, and so she's an au pair. She's got very, very little English, and she's arrived from Argentina, and she's in London and speaks almost no English. And I'm professionally paid to speak to strangers, so I'm sort of all right for a bit, like just, you know, basically talking and waffling. But eventually I had to get to the questions. And I remember I ran out of things to say to her quite quickly because I was just getting, you know, yes, no answers. And then I said to her, all right, I went to the bar and I said, back in a minute. I didn't really need to go to the bar or the toilet or something like that. And I texted Chris Cox, celebrity mind reader and business class traveller, because he used to work at Radio 1 and also generated questions for difficult celebrity guests in order to come up with questions for them if they were promoting a movie and asking them slightly weird, subversive questions. And he texted me back some questions, which I glanced at but didn't read properly. And his question was, ask them, what is the biggest animal you think you could take down if you have? And I glanced at it, and she said, I glanced at it quickly, and I asked her a different question. I said, what is the biggest animal you've killed? And then she said, back home, I have killed, sort of did the thumb across the throat action, chicken, lamb, pig, and just showed the sort of the cutting throats sort of action. And carried on, and then right up to, like, I don't know if it was bigger than that, but it was some pretty big animal, goat, the whole thing. And at that moment, I said, well, you know, I've told you about working on these TV shows while I was trying to brag. Turns out I completely forgot that I've got a 4 a.m. call and I've got to go. And then we left. And at the end, she said she was going to a different train station. We shook hands and it was a draw. It was it was absolutely horrendous. But yeah, I don't know why I mentioned that. Just it's in my mind.
You mentioned
that. Terrible interaction happened.
No, this is what I want out of this podcast. That has ticked the box. The link with that, I think all of this stuff links so much to, like, when you said that thing about I met someone on Tinder. And by the way, Tinder used to be before, I mean, now it's a bit of a knocking shop, but I'm not saying everybody's on Tinder as a prostitute, of course, male or female. But it's kind of, there are more dating apps now, and that's become a little bit, but well, that was kind of the only one for a while, really, other than if you wanted to pay. So it's like a normal dating app. And I remember meeting people that were clearly nothing alike, that they really filtered. And I know male and female people do this. This is not gender specific at all, but people just making themselves look nothing like how they're going to turn up. And I think magicians do this. I think magicians make themselves look so, try to make themselves, I'll emphasize, so cool and so amazing with a edited thing that they send to the client. If you turn up and the first impression or emotion that a client or a date or anybody has is disappointment, you've got a lot of work to do. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. It's huge. And do you know what? I mean, we're all guilty of it. And the next sentence I'm saying, I have to edit myself thinking, I'm walking into that trap myself now. But promo photos.
20 years old.
Well, remember the classic Williamson one that you'd see everywhere of him, the black and white photograph when he was 22. Now, I don't blame him because he's lucky enough to have a really good act. And that is the reason why he can afford to have bad promo because people are booking him sight unseen. I can't take that risk, so I need better stuff. And I have... So my photographs now are five years old. See, man, getting for 6 years old. I put on a ton of weight since then, and I need new photographs. And it's that moment where I turn up at a gig and they go, oh, hi. Now, not that that's the weight isn't the big thing, but they go, you seem to be a different sort of, you know... different guy. Hopefully the rest of the video content things out. I'm not trying to pass off as being the cool street magician, so hopefully it's not a complete stunning surprise. But you're absolutely right, is that, you know, when you arrive, eventually you're going to get booked, hopefully. And then when you do, if it is a stunning sort of moment of, you're not the same guy we booked, you're 20 years older, or you stink, or your clothes are falling to pieces, that is just crushing disappointment. You have portrayed as one thing and you've delivered a completely different, alien, much, much, much worse product.
Yeah, and on Tinder, in the end, do you know what I did? I did my... because people would say about if they're kids or not, you know. And so I had my photo when I was on Tinder, when, you know, Woody was like 3, Grace Evie was 8, and it was Woody hanging off my... It was in the kitchen with Woody hanging off of my neck, Gracie tugging at my arm. And then, you know, we had a tagline on Tinder and it said, please can someone help me with my baggage? Which I thought was
brilliant.
Great. And it just, no disappointment. So you got to know him now and you're feeling a bit more comfortable. You've kind of met up a few times. Your mates, actually, your mates were Bill Murray.
Wow.
Which is amazing. You know, great. And you're so good. You're such a good friend that you don't really talk. You don't name drop that much because, you know. You can tell him stuff about yourself that is, so a little quirky thing about yourself that maybe you don't come out on the thing that makes you comfortable. So if you went somewhere or you were hanging out, you'd need a certain thing to be totally comfortable.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think I am / was a bit food weird, and never has the word a bit been doing more heavy lifting. So I think eventually, after me and Bill are hanging out for a bit, that'd have to come out as I'm not going to the sushi bar with him, or insert lots of different places. Yeah. So for 35 years, I just ate bread and potatoes, pretty much. And now food costs a bloody fortune. Absolutely furious. It's turns out spuds and bread are really cheap. I miss the old days. And dates, Christ, horrendous. Turns out that a real dinner costs loads. Yeah, so furious.
Have a packet of Quavers and a couple of slices. I'll just be in the corner.
Yeah. I'll be over here.
Well, so I'll probably tell him that. What is it? Because you're not, I presume, and I've, this is only through sort of observation, that you're probably still particular.
Oh, yeah. No, I run a tight ship, but I can go pretty much any restaurant with a huge asterisk flowing above. And I could go pretty much any restaurant, and there's stuff I'll eat. So, which is, I mean, I was the middle of a magazine spread for how sort of food weird I was. So, yeah. Now I'll eat, lots of things. It's all based, some version of, meat, veg, spuds, something, but we can go international within that, but it's some version of that. So, yeah, I have, that would probably have to be mentioned to him. And a million other sort of gimmicks of, just the usual things. I don't want any ice in my drink. I don't want any hot drinks. I need a constant flow of Diet Coke if I'm eating. If it stops for a split second, I'll go mental. Within very short order, he would think, I didn't want to be friends with this man anyway, and this is too much like hard work. So, I've got plenty of them.
Well, I've got a theory on all of this, which is based on nothing, but just is that the more, I think we all have them, and I think that some of them are more weird than others, but I don't think anybody ever really, it comes from being at school, doesn't it? When you're an adult, nobody ever really properly judges anybody for a quirk, you know what I mean? It could be a harmless thing. They don't, but it comes from being at school, and I think for me, kids would just hone in on anything that was vaguely interesting, that they, even if it was a positive thing.
No, massively, just at all times it draws attention. I will tell you a little story of food weirdness, which is a scene straight out of a sitcom that is yet to be made. That I went with the school doing a drama trip to Hungary, and the great irony that I was in Hungary and I had 7 bags of Frazzles for a week, and that's it. Quite a lot of rehearsing, quite a lot of running around, and I felt a little bit faint. And one day the teacher said, okay, we're going to go for a walk around the old town. He said, this is Buddha, and this is, and he got as far as say, and in that direction is Pest. And I was, and then he said, and just of course over there is the creeping influence of more capitalist things after the communism fell. Over there, you see the sad glow of the M from a McDonald's. And I was on my toes running as quick as I could with the rest of the class behind me, like sort of a scene from Matilda, just people legging it towards McDonald's. And I went in there. I hadn't eaten for 4 days, really. And I bought 4 large chips and a vat of Coke that was, I'd say, my torso. It was huge. And he said, okay, children, you've got 20 minutes. You've got to eat and then come back as quick as possible. We've got to carry on. Look at the cathedral. And so I had 20 minutes to eat what I presumed was the rest of the week's food. And I'm pushing chips into my mouth. But as I'm walking back to my seat, and as I do, the big vat of Coke falls onto the 4 large chips. And I ate wet, sodden chips while the teachers, come on, children, come on, children. And still, I didn't change anything for 25 years.
Oh, I'm just eating. There's nothing worse than wet chips.
It's vile. So yeah, wet warm Diet Coke over wet chips is hideous.
I tell you what, I love my quality food in that, but when you're in the, if it's the right time, a McDonald's is honestly, I once, when I was in Australia many, many years ago, it was in 99, I went to Nimbin near Byron Bay where I was. And Nimbin is a place where, people can get weed and stuff and add a bit of that. And then you go there for that. It was almost like going to a mini Amsterdam. So you go and eat a lot of whatever. Right. And on the way back, I had the munchies. Yeah. And it's not something I do. I've never been so, I remember the feeling now of that hunger that was so intense. And we were driving for a couple of hours and we got to a McDonald's and I bought, I can't remember what it was, legendary. It was like, no fries, nothing, just burgers. And I unwrapped them all and put them in a big bag and let them like crisps, like cheeseburgers, like about 9 cheeseburgers. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, afterwards we looked at the litter and afterwards I felt so horrific. It was like it was like supersize me. You know what I mean? My liver was kind of turn into pate and stuff. But at that moment, when I was actually eating it, that first few bites, I don't think a human being can be any happier than that in any context. not no affiliation with McDonald's, of course.
No, I mean, I genuinely strongly dislike McDonald's, but at the time I had eaten, I'd looked at kids eating really exotic foods. It was like a scene from Indiana Jones in my complete ignorance. I remember one thing that I thought was a loaf of gingerbread with a boiled egg through the middle of it. That's my abiding memory.
like a European gala pie.
Yeah, exactly. And then they did all the, you know, all the lines. Come on, children, you've got to eat it. This is all the food they've had for a year. It's all, you know. I was a bad kid and who hadn't eaten many things. Well, two things really for the first sort of chunk of my life. So I was not the man to be going to Hungary unless you love irony. That is the.
Just to finish it off, I think for many reasons that would have been an absolute nightmare, of course, as a parent. But for Pat Lunches, mate, I would have loved to have had you as a kid.
Oh, I was a toss. Honestly, I was a dream. I was a dream. Diet Coke, some Frappables, and a crunchy. Honestly.
Sweet. Perfect. Perfect 80s Pat Lunch, that.
Yep.
You're younger than me, aren't you, though? So, you know.
I know, but I know we don't look it. You've looked the same for 20 years, irritatingly.
I wish. Yeah, look close. Right. You do that thing of sharing videos on YouTube, right? One YouTube video. Can be magic, can be not magic. Few minutes. You know, we all hate it. By the way, I hate it when people when you show someone a video, it's got to be fairly short and not more than one or two. You know what I mean? Yeah. In a social situation, you know when and you can't. If it's funny, you can't stare at them and wait for the laugh. Right? You just got to give them the phone. Watch that. You look at your phone or whatever like that. What would you show them? YouTube or something? You know.
I'm going to give two very quick answers. One of them is magic, which is Hollingworth on World's Greatest Magic, where he's doing reformation. And there are people behind clearly seeing how the trick is done, but there are paid stooges. But still, it is a, happy to ignore what's going on. But that is a brilliant magic clip. And then the other one is, I'm slightly obsessed with impressions. Like, I can't do them. I think I can do it. I'm not going to do one now, but I do like sort of voice. Yeah. I like accents and all that sort of stuff. There's an impressionist called Anthony and Gruber.
Oh, okay.
He doesn't. Normally, impressionists have to do funny stuff in order to make it marketable as an act. You know, I'm a funny impressionist. This guy is just a brilliant mimic and just creates scenes from different films and different actors. And he is he's ridiculous. He's one of the most talented people I've ever seen. And if you've watched one clip, it is of him doing a scene from Star Wars where he looks passably like a young Harrison Ford. And in fact, he looks a lot like a young Harrison Ford. And he does a scene from Star Wars. And it's a really old, poor quality clip. And it's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. It is him. 100% it sounds like him. It's terrifying.
Brilliant. Right, send me the link afterwards and I'll put the link in the description. I'll put all the links to all these things in the description. Isn't that thing with impressions, the better it is, even if it's not funny? And that's why I think people sometimes make that mistake of, like, did it again in the 80s. He was like, oh, we've got to do an impression. But just doing it, if it's that good, it just is funny because of the detail of it.
No, it's a detail, and also, like, an impression is sending up of those attributes that we believe that people have, and voice mimicry and things like that, sort of different category, and that's where you get people like this doing replacement dialogue in movies and things that aren't designed to be funny; they're designed to be a perfect match for how somebody sounds, and so watch someone who's very skilled. This, weirdly, that same guy, Anthony Gruber, is a sort of jobbing actor. And over the last few years, I think he's become more of a star. And amazingly, when they were making the Indiana Jones Before Last, there was a big push for him to be young Indiana Jones, which he didn't get, but he did get to play a young Harrison Ford in a different film, which sort of gutted he didn't get to be young Indiana Jones, because he just looks like a 30-year-old Harrison Ford. It's remarkable.
Brilliant. I've never checked out, and I love that sort of stuff. I think it was Martin Sheen that started. I mean, Martin Sheen was always an actor. If you haven't watched Staged, it's so good. It's Martin Sheen. Not Martin Sheen. Who's in Staged with the Welsh actor?
Oh, Sheen.
Barry
Sheen.
Who's
always doing... No, you're aging yourself again. He was in United, and he's everywhere. Probably getting texted the answer now. No, I'm not.
I'm going to look it up, which is going to be exciting for Welsh people listening.
Everybody.
Michael Sheen.
Yes.
Oh, did I say Michael Sheen or did I say Martin Sheen?
Martin Sheen.
All right. Okay. Michael Sheen. So he did a show, a Kenneth Williams show, I think, in the West End.
Yeah.
And that was, and he wasn't, obviously he's an actor, he's doing it as an actor, but he's a bit like Coogan. He can act, but he's also got that talent. It's such a difficult thing to do, because if you play a role and just do an impression, it sounds like you're just doing an impression. So it's that nuance. That might be an incorrect fact, actually. He might not have been him. But anyway, don't matter, does it? Nobody's died.
No.
So Bill Murray's got a lot of money, right? And you don't mention it. And it's not about money, but he's also got quite a lot of time. He's not working on many products now. He's kind of wants to chill out a bit. He's done a lot. He's got nothing to prove anymore. Only really interested in doing things that make him feel worthwhile. So because he's got money and time, he's offered to take some of your workload off you. It doesn't have to be work-related workload, but something that would free up time for you, right, to do something that you've been wanting to get around to doing for a while. It can be learning something, going somewhere, but you finally go, right, that thing I've always wanted to do or learn or start on or check out or explore, you can do it. What is it?
So I misinterpreted the question. My answer, I'm still going to take his money. I want him to build a British magic castle. And I don't want to run it. I just need him to put the money in.
That's a good answer. That's not the wrong answer.
I know it's a bit rude one, but like, and people talk about, you know, the Magic Circle being the British Magic Castle, and it absolutely is not. The Magic Circle is great, but there is nowhere. I'm getting, you know, people at gigs all the time will say, oh, I'd love to see magic, but I just see you guys running around and putting plastic blocks in people's hands. They don't say exactly that, but words to those effects. Wouldn't it be nice if there was I know we're all stuck in a loop in this dreamland, but a place where you could go and see good magic, a proper act. So there'd be a close-up room, there'd be a parlour room, and there'd be a stage room. I think it'd probably be in business for 3 months before it went bankrupt, but it is still a wonderful dream. If someone is absolutely loaded, a British magic castle, can be anywhere, a nice building, invite great magicians from around the world, pay them a decent amount, put them up and advertise it, and that would be the most magnificent thing. I'd love that.
I don't think that's... I think that's the perfect answer. That because why isn't that? Because you only need the history. You've got a magic castle as a blueprint, right? So obviously copying it wouldn't work, because it's idiosyncratic. It's of a time and an era, and there's something about it. But why isn't there somewhere that has magicians? I know it needs tourism, so I've thought of opening magic bars in Sheffield and stuff if I had money. At no point, it's no tourism, so after a while it just become, and like when I put on my shows, they were going to be every month, and then that was unrealistic. But somewhat, you know, because they, you know, you travel to, the people travel from all over the world to do that. I don't know why there isn't somewhere even half of that. There's just nothing even working towards that, is there? Is it something that the Circle have tried to do or are trying to do, or...
I think it's all slightly conflicted. I don't think it's entirely clear what the mission is for the Magic Circle. So there are, is it to get tourists, is it to get punters in to watch magic shows? Is it to advance the skills of magicians? Is it to become known as it was 20 years ago as the, you know, the branding that that every magician should have, the highest accolade you can have as a magician? Is it to put on live shows? Is it the advancement of magic and everywhere in between? So I don't think it's entirely sure what it wants to be, whereas the Magic Castle does know. It just wants to put on, you know, great magic shows every night, feed them expensive food, and be this night spot, this place that people in LA, if you go there and you say you're performing at the Magic Castle, people get giddy at the idea of, oh my God, I dream of going there, because you can't just rock up and get a ticket. The only way is to be invited to the Magic Castle. And even that, you have to get up, you know, you have to dress smartly. It's a suit and tie for guys and, you know, a dress for ladies. And it's just, it's all of those things are make it this place that you just dream of performing at and or to even visit. And those people that are in LA that just think, well, you can't possibly get to visit there. If we had somewhere where people in the local area were like, oh my God, wow, we just look at it from a mile away and we're so excited to even look at it, let alone to visit the doors. And even if we got to watch a show, it'd be the most amazing thing, rather than what we've got with magic at the moment, which is it's so, you know, it's accessible. If you go to a restaurant and there's a magician there, you'll see the magician. But wouldn't it be great if they were like, oh, I request, I'm so excited, please, can, you know, if it just, where they're desperate to see great magic shows rather than having them foisted on them.
I think that's fascinating. And I know I have thought about it, but we haven't got anything. I'm not saying we haven't got, you know, I'm not saying we should have a, well, we should, that'd be great, but a magic castle, but somewhere that was known for it. I don't know.
Yeah, there's not. And also, like, there have been, over the years, you know, there are some great sort of magic bars in this country, which is going in the right direction, and they are got performing magicians, and people can say good magic. So if you are local to those areas, you can go and see it. But there is still a focus on, you know, drink and sort of which is fine. Like in my parallel world where there is a UK magic castle, there'd still be all those things. But when you're watching the show, you're on your best behaviour, you're laughing, you're enjoying it, you're engaged in it, but you're not shouting at the waiter, can I have another cocktail?
Yeah.
I
would think that it's interesting you said about Magic Circle, which again, isn't an insult. Magic Circle's great, but yeah, it is a bit. Most people I meet ask me if I'm in it when I'm gigging. Well, not most of the time, but you know, when I'm gigging, somebody will say it, so one or two people. A lot of them won't know that it's a place. They think it's just kind of
a word,
a kind of ethereal club sort of thing that you're part of. And when they say, oh, where is it? You know, they can't believe it. And some people say, oh, yeah, I went there for a special works thing or something like that. So it's definitely, it's kind of like it's available, but nobody really understands.
Well, that's another example of the corporate sort of thing of what is the Magic Circle, you know, therefore, is it, are they trying to advertise and market themselves as a place to have your corporate event? It seems slightly soulless, but you know, that within every one of those are an interesting goal and helps to fund either the coffers of the Magic Circle or the brand awareness, all those things. But you know, you need to know what you want in order to market it.
I know, that's why it's like the Magic Circle is like a building, a organization version of me. Magic Circle has ADHD. What does it want to be? Oh, by the way, people in Magic Circle be listening to this going, how dare you? I don't mean that. But no, it's that thing of good at loads of stuff. But what do you want to focus on? I don't know. That for a bit?
Yeah, I'll have a go at this for a minute. I'll see you in a minute.
Yeah. When that gets really successful and I start finally earning good money at that, I'm going to do that. Do something else. build another thing. Right. They're having a real challenge with something. Bill Murray's having a proper challenge with something. Can be personal, can be something else. And you've been through a similar thing and overcome it or manage to sort of work towards overcoming it or make it easier or make it manageable, and you give him some advice. What is the thing and what is the advice?
So I thought about this long and hard, and I struggled to actually come up with something because I can't think of what the perfect answer would be. But I'm going to say that my struggle with pain in my feet for 30 years, which is down to nerve damage and lots of other things. But over the last few years, it's become horrendous. And I lost Blackpool largely through not being able to move anywhere because of the excruciating pain in my feet. And then a few months ago, I went to see a podiatrist, which seems like a really easy answer. And infinitely better now. Still really sore, but not as bad. So if Bill Murray's got sore feet, take action. It's a weird answer. But like, I couldn't really think of anything else that I've got the answers for.
It's exactly the sort of answer I want from this. Do you know what, though? A podiatrist, again, I was in Australia once and I lost a couple of days for having a bad foot. Don't know what it was, just couldn't walk on it, and then I could. And I had 2 days in Brisbane. It rained. I got so depressed because I couldn't walk around Brisbane. I couldn't get anywhere. I remember going to No Frills, which was their equivalent to kind of Aldi at the time, and buying tins of tuna and being in agony when I got home, just eating it out of the can because I was skint. And I think those sort of things, especially the older you get, when you get complex problems or stuff that like that, you look for the complex answer. I always say this, and it can be something so getting a massage. You know, like people say, it sorted me out for weeks. And in your head, you go, well, it can't do. It's only 40 minutes in a place, so you don't bother.
Sometimes those obvious answers are there. And even though, like, I know you'll be the same. If I've got a problem, I'm like, great, right, let's get deep into research. I can't buy a toaster because it'll take a week of looking at Amazon reviews. And then going back on that, because of the food weirdness, at one point, I thought, you know what? I'm going to, people talk about hypnosis. This is 35 years ago. No, 30 years ago. I'm going to get hypnotized and that'll sort out the food weirdness. So then I started to read a bit more about it. Then I went to the library and it was the early days of the internet. Anyway, fast forward 2 years, I'm a professional hypnotist because I can't stop. I mean, it only lasted, you know, a few months, but that's what happens is, I cannot be allowed to research things or go deep on things because I will just get lost for a very, very long time.
Yeah, I know. And that's a good thing when you've got time when you're younger. And that's how we probably all got into magic, a lot of us, you know. But now it's kind of like there are other people involved. You know, there's work and there's time is finite. And I'm the opposite as well. If I'll get so into something and straight away I'll buy stuff connected to it and then realize I haven't got time. But then I'd go the other way and try and be really strong and go, right, I did it a few years ago. And I said, right, I'm not a mentalist, I'm a magician. So why have I got these mentors? I'm going to sell them all. I sell my, and I say this on everything just in case someone's got one and they don't want to charge me money that I can't afford. I sold Andy Nyman's Bulletproof book. And I didn't send it for face value. And I'm gutted I have sold that book. It is a beautiful book. And if anybody's got one they don't want, I'll buy it off you for not much more, probably less than you could get it anywhere else. But it's...
And that is an offer you can refuse, isn't it?
Yeah, totally. And I think I do that as well. I kind of go extreme because I know my limitations now, how obsessed I get. So I go, I'm not going to get obsessed. I'm going to get ruthless. Then I chuck stuff away that I need. And it's a constant... Yeah, well, you're like me. You get it. Some people are listening to this going, what's he talking about? He's insane. Right. They can't believe you've invented, created, written, filmed, or conceived a thing. And they want to know where to find out more. What is it and where can they do that, Noel? This is your chance.
This is my chance. Well, there's a trick that's called Mini Book that me and my friend Roddy McGee created and is for sale now. People think that's so amazing. How could you possibly have conceived that? And if they want to find out more, they can at tricktrickboom.com.
And I we won't go loads in a mini book that I have done, and it's great and all that. But just tell me briefly about Trick Trick Boom, because we haven't talked about kind of a lot of people won't know what it is, and just about the kind of idea of the conception of it.
Yeah, well, so me and Roddy, I nagged him for ages to sort of quit Penguin and sort of do something with me, because we're always chatting about magic late at night. And I eventually persuaded him to do it. And so we're going to set up, we have set up our own production company, and we're going to go toe to toe with the big boys. But also our mission is to create innovative, funny, clever, quirky tricks that have something more than just that disposable magic that we all suffer week on week. Well, you do with your landfill that's building in every corner of your house. So we wanted tricks that were good for pros, that good for amateur magicians, but that were conceived by professional magicians, that were subversive, that were fun, that had ideally clever methods or clever presentations, or ideally all of those things together.
I think it's great, and I think the someone said, who was it that said, oh, it was Rory Adams, I think, said the other day, oh, sorry, it might not have been, but about the idea that you've got everybody's review, because there's this whole thing with reviewers, reviewing stuff on the basis of how it works at a gig, you know, is it instantly, you know, repeatable, blah, 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 blah. And the majority of us, myself included, as a professional magician, will buy a magic trick not to do it at a gig because I love it and I want to show it to friends, or maybe I'll do it at the odd gig when it feels a bit. And I think that there's a really lovely, and I think of, obviously, Minibook Pro. I actually love your sticker trick. What's the sticker trick called?
Yeah, the sticker trick is, do you know what? We're going to get that on the website this week coming. Great. The sticker trick is such a commercial trick, so easy. I don't think there's ever going to be a promo video for it, because it's a very simple thing. Trust, when we put it on the website, I'll send you a link to it, maybe you can give it a plug, but it's called Card Tricks Are Extinct, and it's a very, very simple trick that anyone can do, and it's super cheap, and it proper packs a wallop. In fact, Andy Nyman previously mentioned, me name dropping, I was with him a couple of weeks ago at the Magic Circle, and he said, you know, pretty much that he's always got that with him, or if he's going somewhere, because it's so small, it's just a really simple little trick that he really enjoys as well. So, lots of people have said some very nice things about it. It's a great little trick.
I think it's such a shame, and I'd forgotten about it for a while. I've got it down here, and it's kind of where all my thin books are, because it was like a thin thing, wasn't it? And you showed it to me before I knew you at Blackpool years and years ago.
Yeah.
And I remember getting that slight feeling of a little bit like you do with things like Mini Book and Lit and things like that, where you've got a thing and you look down and it's a different feeling. Yeah. And just so people don't know, basically you get a sticker off, right? And it says, what does it say on the sticker?
So you say, you talk about presentations saying, have you heard that? So it's good for magicians to do the line, but obviously you can customize it. But you say something like, have you heard the sad news that card tricks are just dying out? People aren't coming up with card tricks, contrary to all of the evidence around us in this huge cavernous dealer hall usually. But people aren't coming up with card tricks, so we're trying to raise some money. So I'll be looking for a donation at the end of the show. But can I rely on your support? And you'll get some kind of a nod in affirmation to that. So oh, thanks very much. And you pull out a sheet of stickers like you might see from a... what we would call charity muggers in this country.
Yeah.
People are trying to encourage you to support causes, which may well be good causes, but either way, they want a donation or a subscription. And it's a bunch of stickers, and you'll take it off, and it says, I love card tricks on the sticker, and you put that on their chest. And then you say, do you know what, seeing as you've been so kind to promise a donation for this, I'm going to show you a card trick, and you do, and you fail to find the card, a path that's been trod many times before, and say, I can't find it. And then eventually you fan the cards towards the sticker, and now it says Seven of Hearts card trick, which is the card they chose, and they glance back down at it, and no one has seen it change. And that's the whole trick.
Oh, it's great. I think it's a corker, you know, and I'm not just
saying it's an absolute bad year. It is.
Yeah. Very good. So Trick Trick Boom and Mini Book Pro, which you have every right to be very proud of. So at the end of it all, unfortunately, I don't want to get too negative, but they do outlive you. You ate too many bits of bread and potatoes.
Yeah.
And they speak at your funeral. Now, it can be something brief, it can be something, but what would you like them to say about you?
That's a good one. I'm a bit shit with death. It's one of those things that sort of go, nah, it's going to be someone else's problem, isn't it? Yeah. So I think I'd want them to say that I was a nice guy who wanted to help others, who was good, or at least tried hard to come up with magic tricks, and was a fun guy. So, yes. But they can say whatever they want. It's such a weird thing to think about, but yeah.
Yeah, but I know, you know, you don't want anybody saying you're a dick, do you? In front of your family and friends.
If they do, I will haunt them. I will haunt them. It's fine. I'm not worried about that.
Yeah. And we can finish this podcast by me. I can ask you any question you would like me to ask you, and I cannot not answer it.
Okay.
Ask it.
Where do you buy MiniBook Pro from?
you shill. All right. No. Where do you buy MiniBook Pro from?
It's a bit of a weird question. We just had a lovely little chat. I'm not really interested in marketing myself. It seems a little bit lowbrow. But if you insist, tricktrickboom.com.
Brilliant. Well, no, I feel like I know you a little bit more now, and I hope everybody else does too. I will obviously tell this with some information. All the links below of all the things we've mentioned, have a look at it. And any questions you've got of me, just email me, steve@onlinemagic.co. Thanks very much, Mr. Noel Qualter.
Yay! Bye, folks.
So there it is. Thank you very much. Do not fret. I have got many things arriving in the post and much money being depleted out of my already crap bank account to make this sound better and all start coming together. But, you know, for me, it's about the content and I really, really enjoyed this. So thank you again to Noel. Please, all of you, to say thanks, go and check out Trick Trick Boom. Easy for me to say. And, of course, onlinemagic.co and Real Magic Review on YouTube. Any questions, onlinemagic.co. And don't forget, I do the Ask Steve sessions on here as well. So I'll answer any of your questions on there. And that can be about anything at all. Beginners, advanced, performing, creativity. And if I don't know the answer, I shall endeavor to research it. So thanks very much. Do all the good stuff. Leave reviews, 5-star reviews. And I'll love you forever. Bye.